February 1st, 2014, we stand united for Black Americans, both enslaved and free, who built this university and who are also barred from its doors. Black students who wonderfully enrich our campus, those who are amazing geniuses, and those who are academically less prepared. Black athletes who face stereotype threat and are targets of ridicule. Black athletes who work hard and smart to achieve victories inside and outside of the classroom. Black prospective students and parents who thoughtfully and rightfully express interest in our prestigious university. The Department of African, African American, and Diaspora Studies, which has been unfairly attacked, overly investigated, and whose legitimacy has been repeatedly questioned. Black faculty whose research, teaching, and service contribute to knowledge production and social change on our campus and beyond. Black coaches and staff who continue to educate, advise, guide, and inspire young people. Black alumni who value their degrees, treasure their UNC experience, and care about the future of this institution. And courageous administrators, faculty, staff, and students who press on despite impatience, media inaccuracies, gossip, and public attacks on our institution. We chose the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. We are confident in our varied gifts and contributions to this institution. We are integral to its unique fabric of learning and light. We do not apologize to or back down from those who challenge our students' worthiness on campus. We reaffirm our commitment to support the presence and contributions of Black students, faculty, staff, and administrators on the UNC campus. We believe in redemption and healing as a unified community. We ask you to stand with us today and always. Respectfully, the caucus.
Well, thank you very much for opening up with that statement. The timing was obviously relevant, releasing this February 1st. Why release this statement at this time?
This is a very complex story, and certainly there have been numerous thoughts, inquiries around how does the Black community at UNC feel. And so we thought it would be important. We thought it would be helpful. It would help us move the dial in terms of a university community if we spoke. And so the timing actually, you know, Black History Month for many Blacks is controversial because certainly 1 month and the shortest month out of the year does not represent our rich history. But also it is a time, it is a pause where the collective United States looks at the contributions and gifts. And so the timing, it worked for us.
Who wrote the statement? Who came together to put this all together?
It is the collective body. Certainly as the chair of the caucus, you know, I was instrumental in drafting this, but it represents every member.
The second line addresses all levels of academic strength, and obviously there's a lot of talk about that right now on the Carolina campus. The academic abilities of student-athletes have been questioned and really attacked lately. What kind of effect have you seen this have on campus?
In terms of the statement?
In terms of the attack and the question of academic ability of UNC students and student-athletes.
Well, certainly you understand being a part of the university community. Chapel Hill is a very, very special place. People come here from all over the world to live. Because of North Carolina being such a fantastic state, whether it's the beaches, whether it's the mountains, it's the food, it's the hospitality, and certainly we have this little gem here of Chapel Hill. And so when we come here, and again, we choose to come here, there is an informal and unwritten connection amongst us. And so just like a family, when you're attacked, and certainly I would like to believe that there was no maliciousness in what was done, but you have the collateral damage, and then you have those forces that do not act in a loving way. They come from a place of fear, and that hurts. We are pained by this. I've spoken to students, staff, faculty, and administrators. This hurts us. But yet we have to be professional, and we can't necessarily respond to that level or to come from that place of fear. So this statement is a part of that response. I am close to many administrators, and I know how pain they are around this, but they can't necessarily speak in the fashion that they would like as a personal individual.
This is Ron Stutz, along with Rand Northam, WCHL, is speaking with Dr. Deborah Stroman, chair of the Carolina Black Caucus. And Dr. Stroman, UNC clinical counselor and academic advisor Mary Willingham said she'd like to see the academy brought back so Carolina could recruit any level of talent. And then, as long as they're being properly educated, you could bring in anyone. Do you have any thoughts on that?
That is a very powerful statement, and there's a lot in that statement. And so many times you can have people with the most benevolent heart who have good intentions, but without putting it in proper context, especially for those who don't understand the nature of a major university, whether it's from a research perspective, whether it's from big time athletics, it can spill and it can create controversy. And so when you talk about a particular solution, this is very, very complex. And what I find is that your solution needs to be vetted. And I don't know what happened exactly as to why her solution in terms of this remedial academy was not accepted, but it wasn't. Now, can it be revisited? Absolutely. But I think the more proper thing to do is to continue, if you are absolutely passionate that your solution works, and then you have to continue to have dialogue and connection with those at the community. I personally would not have taken it to national media. I personally would not have taken it to those who do not appreciate, and I'll go as far as to say, love the university. We are the Yankees. People love us or they hate us. And I personally would rather work with those who love us to affect change versus taking the chance that someone would use that to hurt our community.
Following up on that same question, do you believe truly that any level of academic ability should be accepted at the University of North Carolina?
Well, we're a very, very prestigious university, and that comes from having outstanding students being admitted, which then attracts outstanding faculty, whether you're teaching or whether you're primarily doing research. It attracts great administrators. And so the history of higher education is that you have cutoffs. We believe in higher education. We believe in public education in America, but not everyone can get into this. And so we don't want to go down that path of let's just open it up to everyone. But we believe that every person that we admit, every student that we admit, undergrad or graduate, has the opportunity and has the potential to succeed. But every case is individual. Every case is individual. There are no guarantees. We admit 4.0 GPA students, and they flunk out. We admit 1.9 students' GPAs, and they graduate. So there are no guarantees. We look at the entire package, we believe in that young person, and we provide the resources and the guidance to succeed.
This is Rand Northam alongside Ron Stutz. We're speaking with Dr. Deborah Stroman, the chair of the Carolina Black Caucus. And the statement points out also the Department of African American, and Diaspora Studies, and that it's been unfairly attacked. Can you explain your thoughts behind the unfair attack of that department?
Well, I'll go back to a spiritual perspective. Again, I believe there are two major forces, love and fear. And what has happened to the department, and which we, I use the phrase now triple AD, but certainly African American, and Diaspora Studies. But triple AD has gone through a very, very difficult time period over these past 3 to 4 years now. There was certainly, and the reports show it, that there were some injustices done. And what I mean by injustice is the sense that we did not do our best in teaching young people in particular courses. The Martin Report called it no-show classes. That was wrong. We admitted that wrong. We realized that we made a mistake. We apologized. We made recommendations, we've made changes, we've hired and we've fired, and still it's not enough. Should we be tarred and feathered and dragged up to Franklin Street? Let us heal. I think it was, it's been attributed to a few people, but it's better to light a candle than to curse the darkness. And so I'm asking for the candles now. We need to focus on the solutions. Where's your candle? To me, it makes perfect sense, and particularly being a Black American, that we would study the history, the culture, and the promise of the greatest continent in this world. It is resource rich, and it makes sense that every ethnicity would study this continent. And so why not at Chapel Hill? The other thing I like to mention is that when you look at a degree, a student takes four, on average, takes 4 to 5 classes a semester. So if the way I calculate, that's approximately 32 to 50 courses to graduate, to have a degree. So let's just say that average student takes between 32 to 50 classes to graduate, to have a degree, and at the most, they took 2 of those no-show classes. So you're going to tell me that that's a meaningless diploma? 2 out of 32, 2 out of 50? Where's your candle? Light your candle. Let's focus on solutions. Let's move forward.
We're going to take a break in just a second for traffic and weather together, but I do want to ask one more question before we do that. Is the administration, in your eyes, doing what it should to ensure that these problems don't happen again? I know there's a lot of communication about that right now and a lot of talk about there are plans in place and there are processes in place, and there's even talk about that it's too much for some areas, that some areas were already doing those things and already overseeing those things, and a lot of talk about the monitoring of classes and making sure they're being taken. Do you feel the administration's doing its part right now to ensure that the proper things are taking place?
Well, that's where it gets tricky, because we've had a lot of hiring and firing, and I know those are dangerous words to use, especially the word firing. But let's just say we've had people dismissed from the university when they necessarily probably did not want to leave. And so you have what I call an old administration and a new administration. And so there's a process as a new administrator where you have to do your listening tour. You have to listen and find out. And then certainly, because you respect the greatness of this university, these previous administrators, I mean, they were outstanding. I mean, you don't get to UNC Chapel Hill, you know, just falling out of the, what they call the turnip truck, okay? So they were outstanding as well. But again, we make mistakes. We're human. And that's why, again, I go back to the spirituality in this, and that it's loving, and then we forgive. And so the listening tour has been done. They don't want to necessarily throw previous administrators and staff under the bus, but yet we have to move our campus forward. So yes, there's been plenty of recommendations and lots of changes they've been made. And if people don't believe that, or if they don't feel their solution has not been heard, I will personally give you my mobile number, and I will sit with you and talk to you about that. Talk to you about those things that have made me slightly uncomfortable as a faculty member because of what has happened that has changed my life. But also, I will sit there and explain to you the things that have been done that have been outstanding, and I applaud. And it brings more attention going back to our mission of educating young people the right way.
Dr. Sturman, a couple more questions for you if you'll stay tuned with us. And Ron, we want to take a look at traffic and weather together.
And we will continue our conversation in just a moment here. And right now, time for traffic on WCHL. This traffic report is brought to you by the new Pita Grill. Locally and family owned, Pita Grill's Egyptian influence on Mediterranean cuisine creates a taste you will crave. Located in Timberline Shopping Center, Pita Grill is perfect for lunch or dinner and is open 7 days a week. Now with your morning traffic, here once again is Rand.
Thank you very much, Ron. 15501 northbound between Manning and NC54, seeing a slight delay, just minor delays there, nothing major at this time. I-40 moving smoothly, the Durham Freeway, NC54, 15501 elsewhere, Franklin Street and MLK moving smoothly. Right now, Estes Drive between MLK and Franklin Street seeing a small delay. That is heading eastbound. If you see anything as you travel throughout the rest of the day, you can be a WCHL Road Warrior. Give us a call at 919-967-8363 or or tweet us at WCHL. As always, we ask you do that safely.
WCHL's Chapel Hill Carborough Weather, presented by Crown Honda of South Point, home of Dream Service, where your scheduled service and maintenance happen while you sleep. What a concept. Dream Service from Crown Honda of South Point, located just a minute off I-40 at the 751 exit. It is 40 degrees in Chapel Hill. It's actually warmed up a degree this morning. It'll probably drop down a couple before we're done. Cloudy all day, rain likely, mainly the afternoon. Much cooler with a high today only in the low 40s, so the temperature won't really change a lot. Chance of rain is 70%. Tonight, we'll have an 80% chance of rain, maybe in the form of drizzle and some fog rolling in as well. Our temperatures will hold steady in the upper 30s overnight. And then tomorrow, a cloudy day with areas of fog first thing in the morning. Showers likely, again, early in the day. Not as cool with the highs in the upper 50s and a 70% chance of rain. Right now, as I said, 40 degrees at WCHL, 724. And now back to Rand Norton.
Thank you very much, Ron. The number of applicants doesn't seem to be dwindling. A recent release stated that UNC saw a 12% increase in first decision applicants, including a 33% increase in minorities and international students. But is there a concern in your eyes that the continuing negative coverage is going to damage the university's reputation?
Where you stand depends on where you sit. Where you stand depends on where you sit. And so UNC is an outstanding university, great history, great tradition. If you live, what I found, if you live in the state of North Carolina, this appears to be center front. When I talk to my friends, colleagues around the country, it really is not that big of a story. So that's good and bad, because we don't want to sit back and say, oh, this is just a state of North Carolina thing, we can ignore that. Certainly, there's the power of the New York media, but everybody who works for a major research institution, predominantly white, is concerned about the representation of the, I'll just say, people of color, underrepresented populations. And so we do have very strategic dialogue and conversations and recommendations and looking at new solutions to help increase the number of underrepresented students here at Chapel Hill. But in terms of our brand, that interlocking NC is so much more than what happens on a basketball court and what happens on a football field. And I can say that from where I sit. As a former athlete at a big-time institution academically and athletically at Virginia, as a former graduate student here at Chapel Hill, an assistant women's basketball coach, as a faculty member here now, and one who serves on our Faculty Athletics Committee and Faculty Welfare Committee, which are part of our faculty governance. And so I've seen a lot, I know a lot, and I probably know a lot more than many people in our listening audience. And I don't say that from an egotistical perspective. It's just that I care about our black students. I care about our white students. I care about all of our students. But we certainly need more representation, because from the entrepreneurship perspective, the best ideas come from many ideas. And so we have to have a broad representation of all people at our university.
Dr. Stroman, this thing just seems like it's going to go on forever. And I'm wondering what kind of stress does all of this put on faculty and staff as well? Now, students at Carolina are hearing that there are peers among them who are illiterate. But how does that affect those who teach them in the classroom?
That is an important question, and I think that's a reason why you're going to start hearing more from the university community, and that means friends, family, alumni, and those who are employed there, and students. It hurts to have someone in your family be attacked. Again, we believe that everyone that's admitted has an opportunity and is qualified to graduate. And so when you hear your buddy in the classroom, again, the picture that's been painted, that something's wrong with you. And I think sometimes we forget as adults that we're talking about a very tender mind, 17, 18, 21 years old, what they must experience to think that I'm not good enough. I don't belong. There are already visuals. There are already things happening amongst that young community where you're questioning who you are. We have to remember the child psychology around this as well. Let's remember when we were that age, we're trying to figure out who we are. We're trying to get confidence. We're trying to establish, you know, our values or further define those values. And then all of a sudden, now you're being chipped away as in, I'm not intelligent enough or I don't fit in. That's very, very painful. So it's bothered the students. And for some faculty members, because again, we all, we're human, we're imperfect. And so we do have, not many, but we do have some faculty members who now question a young person's ability. That's ugly and it's unfair, but it happens. Again, we're all imperfect, we're humans. And so it does affect the campus community. And so we have to lift one another up. We have to understand that every person that walks around on our campus has a right to be there, and it's a wonderful opportunity, and we need to build those young people up.
There are, Mary Willingham said that she has heard from a number of people who support what she has said, who believe the same thing that she has said, that there are students at Carolina who are who can't read. I mean, that was pretty much her statement, that they cannot read, at least at the level that they should be at Carolina. Do you expect more people to come forward now that Willingham has come out, and then also Madeline Levine came out in support of Willingham. But then also, how do you expect that to affect people if they do follow up with this and say that they support that information that she released?
Well, I'm not going to repeat the analysis that was done by our chancellor, our provost, and our vice chancellor for admissions about the data analysis. And again, I'll repeat, it's data analysis, it's not research. And that's with all due respect to the great researchers that we have at our university and other R1 institutions. You cannot say that someone can't read who's attended, who's been admitted at our university. And I would also like to step back and say, if we're being honest about this, this is a K-12 problem. It's America problem. If you really, really care about whether or not Johnny can read, what are you doing in your local community? When Johnny's running and scoring 3 touchdowns, are you in the stands clapping and hollering or on social media, run, Johnny, run, versus read, Johnny, read? What are you doing? This is a K-12 problem. And when we admit students, we believe that they can succeed. And you can't define whether or not someone can read versus based on a vocabulary test. And so those people who are experts in this field, they are looking at what our university administrators and statisticians and reading experts have found regarding her data analysis. And so the truth will come out. And if it's unfortunate, if it's negative for the university, then we will move accordingly because we're focused on moving forward and having solutions. But I find that if we move towards lifting people up, everybody has their candle, as in, you cannot continue to be, what my pastor said, an habitual protester. You have to get to what needs to be done to fix the K-12 problem. It's not about one particular student, or maybe there's a cluster of them at UNC that can't read. I personally do not believe that, but I am not a reading expert. I trust that our advisors, our academic advisors, our faculty are doing all that we can to navigate the rigor of UNC.
Mary Willingham has said that she brought this information to the attention of the media and to the university in order to fix the problem and help the problem. I used the word attack earlier because it has been seen as an attack to those student-athletes with the phrase of those student-athletes can't read or can't read. Do you believe that her statement and her information was, do you believe that she's releasing this information in order to try to fix the problem and that's the reason that she wanted to release this information?
Again, I go back to my spirituality, and there are two forces, love and fear. And I think that not her initial attempt to get attention, to speak for the solution of a remedial academy, I think that comes from a place of love. But what I've seen transpire over the past year or two is that it's moved into a spirit of fear, whether she's conscious of that or unconscious. And this is Debbie Stroman, the individual, because I wear many hats at the university. But I think the actions and certainly the response has been a fear. People have piled on who don't like UNC. I think I've read, and I've been stupid enough to read some of those comments after these articles, which has raised my blood pressure, and I need to stop. But I've read some of those comments, and that is clearly a place of fear. It's everything from blacks don't belong at the university, whether it's from a student perspective, whether it's from a staff or faculty or administrative position. It's been very, very ugly. So what might have started as, hey, there's a great solution I have here. I'm watching some, I'm experiencing some things that don't reflect UNC, has now moved into a place of ugliness and where it's causing pain. And I think people are piling on, and I don't believe that Mary expected all this pile on, where it's taken us into this us versus them mentality. I would have loved, and I can't tell her what to do. You know, she's very, very passionate. But I think when you're in that loving space, there would have been some other solutions to figure some things out and to move the dial along. But again, I wasn't necessarily here during that time period when I believe that she first brought these things to the administrator's attention.
We're speaking with Dr. Deborah Stroman, Carolina Black Caucus Chair, this morning. I'm Ron Stutz, along with Rand Northam on WCHL. And this whole situation has created a lot of turmoil for everybody involved with the university, everybody at the university, everybody who loves the university. What do you hope that the end result of all of this is after it's all over and you can look back and say, well, we accomplished this? What would that be?
Well, I am big into innovation and reform and change and creativity, so I think this helps us in the first way to be more open to conversation, those critical conversations and dialogue around power, around privilege, around race. I'm a firm believer that America still needs to work on coming together and healing as a country around race. I find that there are too many people who are afraid to talk about race, and it is ingrained in our society, and it's okay to sit down and break bread and have a glass of water or wine and discuss it, because there is only one race, and that's the human race. And so I think that's important. Secondly, we have to be creative around our solutions, because we do have predominantly white institutions that have big time athletics, and you watch and I watch football, men's and women's basketball, that are dominated by non-whites, big-time athletics. We all know that, and we're okay with it. Now, what we all wrestle with is, okay, what is the educational experience for these young people? Is there exploitation? Should they have this resource or that resource? Do they have too much? Flying all across the country, luxury locker rooms, being able to miss X number of classes. We need to be creative around that to make sure their experience is better. It's all that it could be. Should they be allowed to come back to the university and have, because they spent so much time playing their sport, should they be allowed to come back to the university for a fifth, sixth, or maybe a lifetime pass to come back and learn? See, these are the things that come up with that are discussed when you bring creativity and innovation in. What is best for these young people? But there is no doubt, when we go to the Dean Smith Center or other places, we want them to succeed. We like them here on our campus. They bring diversity and richness to our campus. But it's everything from making sure that we provide experiential education. We know the power of experiential education. So I'm a big proponent of when these young men and women travel to big cities or if they're in the ACC tournament and they go over to Greensboro, why don't they have an experiential trip that's required? Not at the whim of the coach, but it's required that they visit the International Civil Rights Museum. Or when they go to Atlanta, they go to a science center or the Martin Luther King Center. Why not have them have symposiums or book clubs or workshops? Why not bring in alumni where they have settings, not necessarily where the coaches are in the room, because that's another dynamic of a relationship understanding, but where you bring in alumni to sit with them. I mean, there's so many things we can do when we all put on our creative hats around how we can make their experience better.
Do you believe that a problem starts with the NCAA? Do you see that there needs to be an NCAA reform for the lack of a better term, I suppose?
Well, I think everyone who's involved in college athletics believes that the NCAA should be reformed. It's an institution, and institutions have to continue to, you have to shine the light on institutions, because we get stuck in tradition, we get stuck in patterns of comfort. So everybody from the president, Mark Emmert, we all believe there should be reform. So it's how much do we move that dial? Again, we're all intelligent here. We know there's a strong economic force here. There are many people who make a lot of money off of what we enjoy. And so I don't want to say it's a push-pull. I don't want to say it's a us-them. But again, the best ideas come from many ideas. And so we have to hear from the voices of the student athletes what is best for their experience. We have to hear from the community because we pay the bills. We watch the commercials, we buy the ads, we buy the products and services. We have to hear from the coaches. They are educators. Coaches are educators. That's why we have athletics on our campuses. So we have to hear their perspective, and certainly the administrators. So I am certainly for reform of the NCAA, but I don't believe necessarily that it should be blown up.